Well, I hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving. In for George Norrie tonight. This is Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast. And tonight is just going to do open lines for the entire night. So let me just up front mention to you that while it's open lines, I hope that you treat every opportunity you get on the air with care. And like one of my favorite Thanksgiving slash holiday themed movies, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, in that famous line, right, where in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, where Steve Martin says to John Candy, you know, when you're telling his little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener. Funny scene, but also good to remember on the air. Just make sure that that when you call and you get on the air, that you get your point up front. Because there's no guarantee of how much time you're going to have. So don't make it 3-4 points and your best one last. Put your best point first, and we'll go from there throughout the night. We'll open up the phones now, and if you know them, jump in. If you don't know the numbers, you can go to the website, coasttocoastam.com, and we've got them all listed there, as well as some pretty interesting stories. I don't know if you've been to the website tonight, but there's a couple things you should take a quick look at. First of all, maybe you can crack the mystery. Maybe you can crack the code. The new World War II mystery recently discovered in a chimney of the skeleton of a carrier pigeon with an encrypted message still on the little, you know, banded leg of the skeleton of the carrier pigeon. Nobody knows, of course, what happened to it. It could have just flown in to keep warm and then suddenly it turned into roasted pigeon or what. But whatever the case is, they haven't been able yet to crack the code. We put it up at coasttocoastam.com. It looks like a simple cipher, but I don't know these things, you know. So it could be harder than it looks. That's up at coasttocoastam.com for you to take a look at. Along with another interesting story about shoppers that are going to be spied on with bionic mannequins. It's really kind of a fact. I wonder how your shopping experiences have gone over the last couple of days. If you participated in the whole Black Friday mania. I'm here in Minnesota yesterday. We did three seasons in about an hour. The day started off very warm. It was like 62-ish or 65 or something like that on Wednesday, still hanging in the mid-50s by midday on Thanksgiving. And then just one of these clippers came in, and it was just amazing. Huge winds, up to 30, 40-mile-an-hour winds coming in. By the time that the stores were opening up on Black Friday, it was insanely cold. It dropped down to the single digits of the wind chill factor, and everybody was lining up anyway at all the big stores and getting those big bargains. But you know what are the best bargains, I think, are the ones, the hidden treasures in your home. Two fascinating stories about those hidden treasures in your home in the news tonight. Things that are worth, well, thousands, maybe not millions, but cool nonetheless. We'll get to a couple of those coming up next, and we'll start lining up your calls. Open lines all night. Oh, and that'd be interesting, too, is whether or not you want to hit that theme of the greatest discovery you've made in your home of something that was actually worth something. You had it forever, and then you had like your antiques roadshow moment where it's like, son of a gun. If I'd known it worth that much, I would have been taking better care of it, kind of a thing. But that's just throughout the night. Otherwise, it's open line. So where do you want to take us coming up next? On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Well, we'll get to the open line calls coming up in just a minute on Coast to Coast AM. Again, in for George Norrie tonight on this Black Friday night or whatever it is, less than black. It's a gray Saturday. I don't know, however it works. This is Ian Punnett. And if you're looking for a great present for the holidays, good Christmas gift, if you go to coasttocoastam.com, they do have the new Coast to Coast AM store up. It's an easy click at the bottom of the screen. There's some new, you know, t-shirts, and there's the cool George Norrie mug. And I don't mean just his face. It's his mug on a mug. And but there's hats and stickers and other stuff, too. It's up at coasttocoastam.com if you scroll down to the bottom. And that's always good for gift giving. We're talking about holiday treasures or things that people find that, you know, are great when you find it in the store, but even cooler when you find out you've owned it this whole time. Or the case of of a guy in Glendale, Arizona. I think it was his wife and her husband, this couple, were shopping at kind of a yard sale thing, and they stumbled on a painting. They bought the painting, and it was like a horse picture at a yard sale. But the husband had a hunch that there was something else there. So they did a little digging around on the painting, and they found a portrait, a hand-drawn pencil drawing of former President John F. Kennedy from 1961. Now, it itself wasn't like drawn by somebody famous, like a famous artist, except it was drawn by a famous forger. It's a cool story. There's a guy named Carmelo Sarracci, and he was a forger who served time. When he was in jail, he would do legitimate drawings, and he did one of President Kennedy. So he kind of turned his life around a little bit. They say the painting, or the portrait anyway, is worth about $2,500 to $5,000. And it was found on the back of some horse painting they bought at a yard sale. That's cool. And then this story isn't nearly as cool. It's very sad, and it's terribly sick, except it has an interesting connection to that theme. And that is, there was a discovery made as a result of Hurricane Sandy. The New York City's Parts Department discovered a huge pile of fallen trees that were destined for a wood chipper, and amongst them was parts of a body, of a human body. And this is something that's come up a lot because of Hurricane Sandy. Things that have been uncovered along the coastline have then been buried under tons of sand. And that may or may not be an opportunity for more discoveries along certain coasts where bodies have been known to be dropped from time to time. In this case of this wood chipper, though, it reminded me, you know, the movie Fargo, right? There's that famous wood chipper scene with somebody disposing of a body in Fargo. Well, I know the guy who owned the wood chipper. He was on the shoot. He was one of the crew on the shoot. Most of it was shot here in not too far from me in Minnesota. And he bought the wood chipper at the end of the shoot. Now, this is pretty common for anybody who's worked on a set. You come to the end of when you're shooting a movie, and everybody, you know, they've bought the wood chipper, they bought the brooms, they bought whatever, and they sell it all off at the end of these. What do you want? $10 for this? And it's a fire sale of stuff so that the producers get a little bit of their money back. It's been used, but you get a good deal. And he, as the crew guy, bought the wood chipper because he needed a wood chipper. So he used the wood chipper for years. And then, of course, Fargo becomes this huge movie, and that wood chipper becomes iconic. Suddenly now the wood chipper is so valuable that he doesn't use it anymore. He's afraid of breaking it. So he ends up selling the wood chipper for an enormous amount of money to somebody that does a Fargo museum. It was a lot more than what he paid for it. He was happy to get it, but just one of those times where you find something that's valuable that you've had that later on ends up being much more than you would ever have guessed. Whether that comes up tonight on Coast to Coast, it doesn't matter. It's all about you because we're doing open lines. Let's go to Phil, who's in Oklahoma Springs, Illinois, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. And Phil, I have no idea where that is, and I've spent a good part of my life in Illinois. Where's Oklahoma Springs?
Oh, it's Springfield.
Oh, so it says Oklahoma Springs. You're in Springfield.
Yeah, Springfield, Illinois.
I know just where that is. All right, so what's open lines? Where are you going to take us?
Well, I wanted to share an experience I had in 2004 about the shadow people. A couple of a while back, I heard a show with George on it. I didn't even know what it was until he started talking about it. Sleep paralysis and like shadow people. And like I heard like a lot of callers talking about it. What happened in 2004 with me, like I said, I'm not really into this kind of stuff. It was during the daytime. I remember, you know, yeah, I was drinking whatever, but then it was just like I just was like laying down and like I couldn't move or anything. Then all of a sudden that it just appeared in my room. Like some dark thing. I didn't see what it looked like. I was really scared. And I know a lot of people were like saying maybe alien and stuff. I think it was like a demon or something because its presence was really scary. And I really didn't want to like talk about this or anything. I talked to a couple of friends of mine about this, and they had similar stuff. It was really kind of surreal. when they were saying that they had something like that happening too. And I think that this stuff really happens a lot more than what people don't realize.
Well, that interesting. Now, what did the shadow person do that you saw?
Well, when it had happened, I was trying to move. You know, I remember trying to scream. I hear myself in my mind screaming, and kind of like I was really scared. Kept trying to like close my eyes, like as though they could just open my eyes. They try not to look at it. They said it was like a robe or a sheet or something. I was wearing something, hooded or something. I didn't really get to see the face because I was trying not to look at it. I was really, really scared. Finally, it just all just stopped, and then I woke up. And a lot of people say, well, maybe it was a dream, whatever. It was during the day, and then one of my friends said he thinks it's aliens or something, but he says they have the power to, like, make you paralyzed or something. That could be true because, you know, I was still wide awake, and then all of a sudden I couldn't move, but I don't think they're aliens at all. I think these are, like, demonic kind of things or something.
Well, and then you said there was alcohol involved?
Well, I had, like, a couple of beers. I was wide awake. I mean,
okay,
I was not sleepy, drowsy at all.
All right.
And
I was just checking. Like, want to get the full dimension of the story, and thank you, Phil. Glad you checked in. This is not an uncommon account of people who have a wide awake moment of drowsiness. And where exactly that falls along that line, of course, that's where the debate is. Barry is in Hollywood, Florida, on Coast to Coast, Wild Card Line, open lines.
Hey,
Barry?
Hey, what's going on? Can you hear me?
I can hear you just great.
Okay. You know, you've ever watched the movie X-Men with Wolverine and all those superheroes that have powers?
Seen
well,
all of them many times.
Okay. Well, it might, it's not a joke. This is serious. I got to let you guys in on something, or let you in on something, and the viewers. I am a mutant. I've known this ever since I was 7 years old. I used to play in the back of my, I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't have any, toys to play with, but I used to play in the trees in the backyard, and I fell from the tree one day, and I found out that I was able to, land and levitate, but I just thought it was just something that, maybe I hit my head on a branch or something, and, I actually bumped into another child that lived close to my house, and he had also a power where he was able to sort of appear and disappear, but in a fast way. And I'm just calling to let you guys know that the portal, obviously, for 2012 is going to be open.
Okay, wait. You're jumping topics here. So you're, well, as a mutant, to what
yes,
do you
sir.
Attribute your mutant powers?
Well, I can't fall hard. I don't land hard. I jump off my roof, and right before I hit the ground, say probably 2 inches, I levitate, and I land. I just land smoothly.
Okay, I got to jump in here. So I'm sure you've told the story to many people over the years, and they raised an eye to you, and they went, Barry, no way.
Actually, I haven't.
Have you ever demonstrated this ability to anybody?
Yes, I have. My girlfriend, I actually am raised in a Christian family, a very strict Christian family, and we didn't ever have a great relationship with my father. He actually had he was very physical. We basically used to sit on the table, eat dinner, and hardly ever speak. Just eat and
that sounds
put your
awful.
Plate on the, put
it
your
sounds
plate
terrible.
On the,
but what I want to know is like why if you demonstrated that, why not put you got to put that on YouTube, dude? You got to let people see it. Why not show people what you can do?
When you are different and you really find out that you have some sort of powers, first of all, you're second-guessing yourself, and then you're wondering, what are you here for? For a long time, I thought I was the devil or something. Something didn't feel good. But I found a friend that had a certain type of, he basically can shift, like, really quick and appear behind, pass by a tree and shift invisible and reappear. And basically,
Whoa. I got to make sure I understand this. You're looking at the tree. Your friend is on one side of the tree walking behind it, and they disappear behind the tree, and then they reappear on the other side a second later?
Yeah, he looks like a spiral. He spins like a spiral. He's younger than I am, but we stay in touch. And we were talking about opening up for the portal that's going to be opening. It's not going to be opening at 2012 December like everyone thinks. We have a couple of sources that basically got us into this little coalition of ours, and we have powers, and we are able to identify the portal's going to be opening it sometime around 2013, but in the beginning of 2013, not on 2012, but in the beginning of 2013. And we're going to be open. The portal's not going to be open long enough for, you know, for parties or whatever. You have to be open.
For parties? What do you mean by it's not going to be open for parties? You mean for groups of more than two or three, or?
There's a lot of people that's just going to celebrate for 2012 with, you know, abusing the holiday, feeling as if it's, you know, it's going to be a celebration. But it's really going to be an enlightening, energizing experience. And
okay,
if you're open, if you're open, you will receive all of the beautiful powers and the knowledge and the gifts that heavens is going to allow you to have. And
totally
so there
that.
Are... There are mutants here on this planet Earth, and I want you to know the Wolverine thing, the X-Men thing is very, very much real. There's
I love that, but let me ask you what you would do with that power that you have to not land hard. If that's your power, how do you use that for good to not have to land hard?
Well, my girlfriend, she basically called me a freak for, that's how we basically fell in love, and she's pregnant now.
I got it. You guys got freaky. I get that. My question is, how would you use that power?
Well, the funny thing is, I don't use it for anything. I basically.
But isn't that a waste of the power? Isn't that a waste of the gift?
Well, no, we basically consolidated. A lot of my friends, well, a lot of the mutant friends that I know, they're very close to us, we're going to open ourselves up for the maximum power during 2012.
Okay.
And whenever it arrives, you have to be open. So it's something involving your chakra and whatever. But what I'm saying
that,
is...
But I was really just focusing on it. I got to get into some other callers here, but I'm just going to say... I think you have an obligation. If you know nothing from the X-Men, you know two things. That, you know, is that you have an obligation to do something good with this mutant power that you have.
Can I tell you something real quick?
I got to finish, Barry. And then the other thing is that if you don't make yourself known, then you can't help others. And the story of X-Men is... that you have to lead other people out of the bondage of the convention of society so that they feel free to come out and be who they truly are too. And if you have these powers, you should do that.
The reason why my friends don't come out is because we are being watched. There's a lot of people that's waiting just to see who we are, and so they can probably kidnap us. It's not easy being a mutant, okay? I have a lot of friends that basically would never say that they're mutants. Only this 2012 thing had us consolidating all of our thoughts and all of our prayers to see if we can basically be enlightened, to see what our purpose really is. But there's a lot of potential people in the government that's waiting on to see if they could probably kidnap us. We don't know.
All right. I got to get in some other people. But I strongly encourage you, Barry, to reconsider that position. I understand that wherever you are, there's a Senator Robert Kelly who's going to attempt to register you or, you know, something like that. I understand that. You may have to experience some prejudice. But if you have this talent, if you have this gift, you're obligated to do something with it. If you have to wait to the beginning of 2013, that's fine. But at some point, you need to share that gift. Otherwise, mazel on the upcoming birth of your child. All right, well, that takes us to the bottom of the hour. Let's see if I can get in. Julian, can we squeeze you in before the bottom of the hour, or will you need more time?
Oh, wow. Either way, I really just want to talk about NASA building a warp drive. They're actively building it. They've done experiments to prove, and they did successfully prove, that they could warp space itself. And they've always told us the reason.
All right. Well, then hang on a second. We'll get more about that coming up, okay? And hang in there, because I want to know more. So don't hold back. But I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll come back. I want to hear more about the NASA warp drive in just a minute. This is what Open Lines is all about. So when you get your chance, you'll take the show where you want to go coming up on Coast to Coast. And take a look at what's up on the website tonight, too. Some great stories waiting for you at coasttocoastam.com. And one of those things that's up there is a link for my book, which is coming out in the spring. Not about coast topic, but you might enjoy it anyway. It's up there at coasttocoastam.com. This is Ian Puttett in for George Norrie. All right, so we're going to take this one from the top. Julian's nice enough to hang on Open Lines on Coast to Coast. If you need the numbers, you can always get them at the website. Hey, Julian.
Hey, Ian. Thanks so much for letting me hold.
Thanks for letting us restart it. So let's pretend we never had this conversation.
Okay.
Julian's in Bangor, Maine on the wild card line on Coast to Coast.
Hey, Ian. This is one of my little pet issues here, why it's not being more widely reported, although it is starting to be reported more. There's a PDF about it on the NASA Technical Report server, so this is totally legit. They're actively building a warp drive. Forever they've told us that, you know, the reason why Ancient Aliens isn't true or any of these other things is because the distances are just too hard to traverse, because you can't travel as fast as the speed of light. Nothing can. Well, it's true, you can't physically travel faster, but space-time itself can travel faster, and a warp bubble with a spaceship inside it could. And maybe the limit's more like 30 million billion times the speed of light. So that changes this, oh, they can't come here story.
And NASA's working on this, meaning what? I mean, other than just a bunch of guys with protractors and pencils, they're working on it doing what?
Well, the theory, which was just pencils, was in 1994, and so it's taken a while to start building things. But, yeah, they've actually built an experiment which showed that they can bend space-time. They have, like, a little image of space-time itself being warped. It's a very minute, you know, amount. You can barely detect it at all, but it proved the theory. It's proof of concept, and they're actually building a warp drive. They you know, this PDF talks about how they took some money from another project to start building this warp drive. The Eagle Works is like an advanced physics lab, and they say that they're going to continue to do this. They're going to continue to just take funds from other projects because they think it's so important to continue this.
Well, I believe that, and I believe particularly what you said, that if they've been able to do it, they've been able to do it minutely. And so, but if they can do that, that's proof of concept, and they could be able to blow that up into a bigger form.
Absolutely. Originally, the theory called for like a whole universe's worth of dark energy. Now it's down to like 2 kilograms of dark energy, which still is a lot, but I think it's going to continue to come down. And they actually have a map of exploration where they believe within 50 years, we could go to Pluto in 100 days. And interstellar travel within 100 years, like a 2-year trip to Alpha Centauri.
I think that'd be cool. Now, I see a theme here, though. Like, so here we're talking about warp drive travel at a minute basis right now, not unlike the previous caller whose X-Men abilities was it found it difficult. He was not hurt if he didn't land hard.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a practical application, but I thought, hey, football. If you fall hard a lot in football, maybe that would be nice to fall softly.
Exactly. Just to fall softly, or the guy that disappears behind trees. That, too, is kind of the beginning of a superpower. And thank you, Julie. An interesting side note about NASA. Larry Hagman died. Best known to a generation as J.R. Ewing, of course, to another generation as Tony Nelson of NASA in I Dream of Jeannie. He's been ill for a long time. I don't know if you saw the more recent incarnation of Dallas on TBS, but they were obviously shooting around his illness. I thought they were doing it pretty well. He was 81. He's had health problems for years and challenges and all sorts of stuff. So really, I think he's He did remarkably well. But he'll be missed. You know, he had a lot of fans, and he was an interesting guy. I know a guy in town that has interviewed him several times and just found him to be the nicest man. So always like to hear that. All right. So sorry to hear about Larry Hagman, but it's open line. So where do you want to go? Let's go to Jeff in Culver City, California, on Coast to Coast, open lines west of the Rockies. Jeff?
Yeah, how you doing, Ian? I always wondered about the rapid rise in technological advancement in just the last 112 years, and it makes me think that this knowledge did come from some type of alien technology. You know,
Tell me why. Just think,
Ian, Orville and Wilbur Wright created the first airplane out of what was essentially paper and aluminum. Now, fast forward 112 years later, and we're traveling into space on a regular basis, building space stations, positioning satellites and drones all over space, not to mention all these other gadgets like iPhones, laptops, weapon systems, and the like. Do you believe, Ian, that our government, as well as other governments, have been hoarding this technology from the aliens or extraterrestrials and just been lying to the people about it? Or do you think it's the result of massive research and development by creative individuals or just really smart people? Because, I mean, it's been a vast amount of technology in the last 112 years, and, you know, something has to explain how we went from, like, point A to point Z all of a sudden.
I don't know if it's all of a sudden. I think you have to take into consideration decades of failures. I mean, we have the record of so much failure. Of all of it, just even with the Wright brothers, how much failure they experienced before, you know, they experienced the miracle of flight. And then how long was it before each one of those technological advancements went up to a significant other stage?
Right.
There's a lot of rocket failure, for example, and literally decades of failed rockets.
Yeah, of course, trial and error. But can you imagine in 112 years? I mean, that's really advanced. And can you imagine 50 or 60 years from now, what's in store for us? I mean, if they got this alien technology and they've just been doing it piecemeal, little by little, you can imagine what 50 years from now, like the previous caller said, we could probably be going to Pluto or Mars in,
right,
you know, a day or two.
Well, right. But again, will that come as a result of some empirical data that is something we already hold, which now we're releasing a little bit at a time?
Yeah, that's what I think. I think they already have it.
I understand that. But or will it come from the fact that we're going to keep going in incremental advancements? There's a formula, you know, that technology doubles every 5 years, and that's, it looks like we lost him. But that technology doubles every 5 years. That's a pretty good formula. So the things that go, you know, that come along twice as fast with every, you know, 5 or 6 years. So, you know, it's not even, maybe not even 5 years. I don't even know what the current, maybe they've changed that, whatever that is, a logarithm or whatever, or those ratios. But that's where you have interesting work. Now, here's the only thing I'm objected to is the idea that it's mutually exclusive. It's one or the other. You know, it's either alien technology that we have, which we've had now since the Wright brothers or something, and that we're just releasing slowly, or it's innovation, human innovation and experimentation. I don't believe in those. I believe that's an artificial construct to say it's either or. If there is such thing as alien technology that our government has, and I think that's an interesting exploration, if that exists, I think it still doesn't mean that we aren't innovating as human beings. First-time caller line, Jordan is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, on open lines on Coast to Coast. Jordan?
Mr. Knapp.
No, I'm Ian Punnett, but George.
Ian, I'm sorry I knew that. Ian.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I had a UFO encounter in 1997.
Tell me about it.
Well, I lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico at the time. And
at the base
of the Sandia Mountains.
Yep.
Around Tramway and Academy. All those who live there, you know who I'm talking about. A little nervous, sorry. I was outside at night. It was a clear, starry night. And my family was inside watching TV, and all of a sudden I had an urge to look up at the sky. I did, and there was this large black triangle that blacked out all the stars and there's a light at each edge of the triangle. It was moving about 20, 25 miles an hour, really slow. Didn't make a sound. And I was really taken back. I went out, went inside and begged my family to come outside to look at it, and they kind of brushed it off their back. So I begged my mom, "Mom, come outside. Please, please. Okay, I'll come outside." She came outside. I pointed at it, said, "What is that?" She saw it too, and she said, "I have no idea what that is." And it just flew very slowly across the sky until it flew out of sight.
Well, that's the same kind of thing which was reported over Phoenix, right? The Black Triangle formation?
Exactly. Years later, back in like 2000, I saw that documentary on Netflix about the Phoenix Lights.
Well, no, originally it was 1997, right?
Yeah, so it wasn't until 2000 that I actually saw that documentary, and it blew me away.
Right. Yeah. So could it have been from the same on the same night?
It could have been, but this thing was at least a football field, two football fields big. No sound, at least maybe 1,000 feet in the air. Really close to the ground.
Yeah, that's pretty much the story of the Phoenix Lights. It was about 1,000 feet up, moving slowly, no sound. So check your, see if you can find a way or have you or your mom check your calendar and see whether or not you can date that to March or April, whenever the Phoenix Lights, that was spring, wasn't it? And see whether or not it ties into that. And maybe that's, maybe you saw the first wave before anybody else did. Or the end of it, depending, I guess, on what direction. Sean is in Hayward, Wisconsin, where I have spent actually a part of every summer for the last couple of years. Hey, Sean.
Hi, Ian.
Hi. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Thank you, sir. Hey, I'm a Fargo movie fan.
Well, good. I'm a Hayward, Wisconsin fan. So.
Yeah. Hey, I would like to ask you, how did you get invited into this group of Coast to Coast? Have you met Art Belt?
Sure, many times.
He invites you in, and what is your favorite Art Belt story? And my third question would be, why did he leave the country? I heard that he had been threatened.
Oh, no. Well, no, not threatened, not that I know of, anyway. He left the country when he married a woman from the Philippines, and then they came back for her citizenship. And then I think really comes right down to it is Art left primarily because the American dollar, his retirement dollars, go so much further in the Philippines. So
was broadcasting out of the desert.
Yep, he was in Pahrump, Nevada, and that was
forward all of these technologies that the government doesn't want people to know about.
And well, Art's whole
he created an empire for people like us.
Well, yes. Well, he would. The story was actually the original show, Sean, was political. And he just had an hour at the end of every show in which he was taking calls, and it kind of started from there. Art's politics run to kind of to the into what some people consider to be kind of free. He's freedom oriented, and he was a kind of a free thinking guy, so he didn't fall easily into either political group. And he just opened up the phones for people and in a non-judgmental way, started getting a lot of calls from around the country. And it started to take over more and more of the show. And he started concentrating less on politics And he started instead focusing more on the willingness to explore anything. And that's really where the show took off, was just he was willing to have conversations that nobody else was having on the radio. And so it wasn't about like it didn't start about alien technologies. It was just part of it. But he would be willing to explore anything in a fairly objective manner. And that's how that kind of came about and then became the sole focus of the show. Politics rarely playing a part of it after that, although Art's not shy about his opinions, or hadn't been anyway. I was forced upon him, I think. I think that's probably the best way to phrase it. He had a few people that were filling in, and I was one that the company asked to use, and Art gave his approval, and I was always grateful for that. But he didn't contact me and say, hey, would you like to do this? But the company proposed me, and I filled in, and he didn't object too loudly, I guess, and that's why I've stuck around for all these years. Ed is he's on a wild card line. And he's in Toronto on Coast to Coast AM. Ed, welcome to Open Lines.
Hello.
Hey.
Oh, hi, Ian. I have just a antique story that I like to share with all of you.
Something you found that was in your house or that was of great value, like a couple of the stories we were talking about earlier.
I didn't appraise this object yet, but I was cleaning the basement with my dad. He's here in the room. And, because we're getting it redone, you know, family space and all that.
Sure, yeah.
And always in the corner was an engine block for a car that my dad always wanted to, build, right? And, you know, we never got the chance to, you know. And next to the engine block was a filthy old box. I didn't really think of anything of it. So one day, you know, we were cleaning, you know, I was just moving stuff. I decided to say, wipe the filth away from this box, and it said ammo case on it. And I was like, this is weird.
Ammo case.
Okay. Yeah. My grandpa originally, he was, in World War II, right? And so I kind of cleaned it off, and it was a World War II ammo case, not filled with bullets, but it was like, it was, pretty cool. And
yeah, I love those things.
Yeah. And it's actually right here, right now. I'm like looking at it.
So have you had it appraised? You haven't had it appraised at all. You don't know yet what it's worth.
No, I don't know what it's worth. But
I'll be curious. You got to love stuff like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't sell it because it's like part of my family. I mean, you know, I showed my grandma and she's like, oh, I remember this, you know.
Sure.
I don't know my grandpa because he died, like, you know, before I got a chance to know him. But, you know, this is a part of my history. And
you got to save it. No, I have a bunch of that sort of stuff. I have a sniper rifle, a Japanese sniper rifle that my dad picked up off the beach in World War II, and I'll always keep that too. Kind of cool. All right. So thank you. And good luck with that. You know, I discovered I had a painting. I meant to tell you that my wife bought on eBay. This, I think, for like $10. We found the artist and it's worth $800. But, you know, take your little treasures where you can. All right. So I Dream of Genie music in honor of Larry Hagman, who passed on. And Open Lines continues next on Coast to Coast.